How's everybody doing? How many of y'all were in the Genesis study last year? Do y'all remember when Batman came to Bible study last year? That was weird. My name is Nyga Spaulding, and I'm the women's equipping coordinator here, and it's my pleasure to get to teach Mark tonight with you, and so I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then we'll get started. So, Heavenly Father, just thank you for your word. Thank you for a bunch of women in a room on a Thursday night where the weather took a crazy turn, and yet they braved the roads, which I'm sure were just nasty out there, to come and hear about you. And so, Lord, I pray that all of our hearts would be open to the message you have for us, and my words would be clear, and that my words would be compelling, and Lord, that we would grow in our affections for you. It's in your son's name we ask these things. Amen. As you guys know, we divided up Mark into three categories, right? We have deity, discipleship, death, right? And we're in the thick of the deity part right now. And what we told you early on is the reason why Mark wrote it in such a way is because Mark is building up to this big climactic moment where he's going to ask you, what are you going to do with this Christ? Are you going to follow him? And in order to ask that question, he needs to introduce him in such a way to compel you to want to follow him, right? Because if you're single, right, and all of a sudden a guy shows up at your door and he's like, would you like to date my friend Tim? You'd be like, who's Tim, right? I mean, that would be your first question. And if you just said yes, you need help, okay? Like, get help, right? But if he was like, no, Tim is a guy, no, he throws a really tight spiral and he likes kittens, and I'd be like, yes, date Tim. I mean, clearly a winner. And so what Mark is doing in that same vein is he's going, hey, this is Jesus Christ, and he is worth following. And so he's showing us Jesus' deity through all of these stories. And you guys, you've seen him already. You've seen him heal lepers. You've seen him heal the lame. You've seen him face the opposition from the spiritual leaders, the religious leaders of his day. And so now Jesus is upping the ante. He's going, hey, that stuff, that was children's play. Now watch what I can do. And I know we didn't meet last week because we were meeting in the Metaxas event, but if you listen to Judy Wimberly's talk from last week, then you listen to her talk about how Jesus was able to conquer the storm. And if you listen to her talk, then you realize this was an area of great competency for the Jews. In fact, it was such a great competency, he met them in a place where they should have been thriving, and instead they were terrified, and they were fearful. And God demonstrates his power by calming the storm, which for them, the sea was a great place of evil in the ancient, in the Jews' mind in the first century. And here's Jesus going, the storm's nothing for me, bow down, right? And then he goes on to the demon, not only the demon, but like, the demon, where Legion has 2,000 demons inside of him, and Jesus is going, with the word of my mouth, I will cast them into the pigs and off the cliff. Jesus last week is demonstrating great power. And the message for us last week was not to fear his power, but instead run to his power. And this week, he's upping the ante even more. He's going, okay, the storm, the demon, now I'm going to conquer disease and death in magnitudes you have never seen before. You thought that stuff was cool before. Wait till you see what I can do today. And so just going to take a moment. Judy Wimberly's not here today, but today is her birthday. So she's probably in Uptown having a few, if you know what I'm saying. Judy doesn't drink at all. But she's going to be listening to this. And so I just want to take the opportunity to wish her a happy birthday. She is a woman that if my life is marked by half her faithfulness and integrity, it would be a success. And so happy birthday, Judy. And so this week, like I said, this week is about fearless faith. And we're going to talk about what fearless faith looks like. And we're going to talk about what Mark is doing with this story. And so what we have this week is what we call the Markan sandwich. And this is a device that Mark is going to do often throughout his book. And what he does is he takes two stories and he starts one, and then he puts another one in the middle, and then he ends it, right, like a sandwich. Y'all Jersey Mike's, you know what's up? You know what I'm saying? Anybody eating the nukes right now? I love sandwiches. Sandwiches. If you go to Jersey Mike's and you're about to come see me, I'll take a number 7, no cheese, Mike's way. But anyway, so he's going to make a Markan sandwich here. And what he's doing with this is he's allowing the middle portion, the meat of the story, to really be the driving point. He's trying to show you, he's going to start it out and he's going to go, by the way that I've weaved this story together, it's not two unrelated things. Instead, I'm making one big story by the way I've connected them. And so unless you think it's just a coincidence, let me show you some of the connections between these two stories. They're connected by more than just time. Like, first of all, with the story of Jairus and his daughter, we've got Jairus, who's at the top of the society. And we've got the hemorrhaging woman who's at the bottom of the society. And so there's a stark contrast between these two characters in the story. We've got both of them in hopeless situations. We know the woman has sought answers from all different places and hasn't found any. And so she's coming before Jesus in this hopeless situation. And then we see Jairus also coming before him going, hey, she's dying. I can think of few situations that are more hopeless than watching your child die before your eyes. One, it's a 12-year-old girl in Jairus' story, and then the woman was bleeding for 12 years. It's not a coincidence. Mark is purposely putting these stories together, and I'll show you in a second why he's doing that. In Jairus' story, it's his daughter that he's worried about. In the story of the bleeding woman, this is the first and only woman in the gospel who is called by Jesus daughter. It's not a coincidence. He's showing us these are stories are linked together. And then finally, the same Greek word is used of both people, phabeo, and it's a Greek word for fear. They were both fearful. They were both terrified at their situations. And so I argued already that tonight we're going to learn about fearless faith, and you're asking me, how could it be fearless faith if we already know that they're phabeoing, they're already fearing, and we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about what fearless faith really is and what that looks like. And so let's look at the bread of this Mark and sandwich. Like I said, it's Jairus, okay? And so if you know Jairus, he's a synagogue leader, which means that he's at the top of society. He's wealthy, he's well-known, he's a Jewish leader. He's probably friends with, if not in the same company with, the same Jewish leaders who have been opposing Christ through his entire ministry. In fact, Jairus might have been one that's planning to stone Jesus himself. He's a guy that would have been in complete opposition to Jesus' cause on the earth. And all of his friends, the people he dined with, the people he hangs out with, are probably like, do you hear this chump from Nazareth who's claiming to be God? We're going to kill him. And Jairus is coming to that man. Not only is he coming to that man, he's coming to him in a very public way. He comes before Jesus in front of a very large crowd and asks him, will you come heal my daughter? What would drive a man like this, who doesn't even believe in Jesus' ability, who's probably been opposing Jesus most of his time, if not for desperation? Jairus is desperate. Why else would he go to Jesus? Right? And I was in a huddle group yesterday morning. I taught this message at Wednesday morning, and a sweet grandmother pointed out in a way that I hadn't quite gotten, and it was a great insight, that isn't it sometimes our children that drives us to the point of desperation? You like how I said our children, because I don't have any? But I have a niece, right? And so I've had a rough couple of weeks, like with in terms of injuries. It's been a rough couple. I put a drill bit through my thumb 3 weeks ago. It's on Facebook and Instagram. It's finally healed. No more blood. And then the next week I got this like corneal ulcer. And if you've never had one, they hurt. So I had that. And then I played softball this week and I slid into home for no reason because I was called out, even though I wasn't. I mean, I was safe. And it was like sliding on kitty litter. It like took a lot of skin off. And my roommate sitting right there, and she'll testify to you, I am the biggest wimp when it comes to small pain, right? Like you could probably cut my leg off. I'm like, it's fine, we'll just walk it off. But then I'm like, oh, my thumb all day long. Look at it. I mean, posting photos of it and everything. But if my niece gets a skin knee, we're calling 911. Game over. Why? Because I care about her. And I think Jairus, had Jairus been the one dying, he might have been too proud to go to Jesus. He might have been like, you know what? There's pride in death. In fact, in the ancient Near East, it was considered proud to take your own life rather than bring shame upon your family. So if you're at the point of causing bankruptcy, it was more honorable for you to kill yourself than it would be for you to bring shame upon your family. And so I can imagine if it's Jairus dying, he's probably like, you know what? I'll just take the death. It's no big deal. There's honor in dying. But when it's his baby girl, then suddenly he's willing to go to the very man that he's been opposing. The very man he's not even sure is who he claims to be. And Jairus, in a very public way, casts off anybody who might be considering going, Jairus, man, Jesus, you can't come to Jesus. And he goes, I don't care. I don't care who sees me. I don't care who knows. I'm going to fall at his feet. And that's the bread of this. And what Jesus does then is when he gets to the woman, which is the meat of this passage, the meat is going to show us what Jairus needed to see. What do we do when we're desperate? Jairus is desperate, and Jesus is going to use the story of the hemorrhaging woman to show him and us what we're supposed to do when we're desperate. And so we get to the hemorrhaging woman, and this woman, as you guys read in the text, 12 years of bleeding. 12 years of bleeding. One scholar, Sandy Glahn, is a woman who mentored me. Actually, she's Dr. Sandy Glahn now. She just got her PhD, and she wrote an article for Bible.org, and she asked a gynecologist, what would bring a woman to bleed like this for 12 years? And the gynecologist said, probably uterine cancer. And so it's more than just having, like, if I might be callous, more than just a long-term period. I mean, she's dying. And the text tells us she spent all of her money on medicine. She's tried everything she can. And not only that, we know from Leviticus 15 or 12:4 and 15:25 through 30 that she's considered unclean by the Jews. Everything she touches is also unclean. And so you can imagine how isolating that would be. If she came into your home and sat on your couch is now unclean and you have to ceremoniously cleanse it. If she touches you, you're unclean and you have to ceremoniously cleanse yourself. So you don't want to be near this woman. She's broke. She's dying. She's lonely. She's an outcast. I'm sure she smelled awful. She probably hasn't been touched by a man in 12 years. I'm sure her friends have all left her. I mean, it's hard living for the Jews back then if they're unclean. Right? If I lived in the 8th, I'd be like, nobody high five me. Like, I would constantly be like this. If I got a party to go to, can't be unclean. You know, she would have been an outcast. Probably living outside the city, away from everybody. But she's heard about Jesus. You can imagine she's in a desperate situation. She's dying. She's dying. She's been hemorrhaging for 12 years, but she hears about Jesus. And she thinks to herself, what if I just touch his cloak? What if I just touch his cloak? And this is pointing out one of the sort of fairy tale kind of views that was held during this time, that a person's power and prestige was passed through their clothing. So what she's essentially saying is, if I can just touch Jesus, maybe then I'll be healed. It's a small measure of faith, right? And it tells us in the text that she came from behind. She doesn't come publicly in front of him because she knows she's an outcast. You can imagine a group of Jews are following Jesus and he's walking along and here comes this woman. You can imagine they'd be going, she's unclean. You need to get away, right? You can imagine that kind of rejection. So she can't even come from the front because she doesn't have that kind of faith. She's scared. She's phobeo. She's terrified. But she thinks, just maybe if I touch his cloak, I'll be healed. And so she comes anyways, and she comes from behind. She touches his heel, and Jesus stops and goes, hey, who touched me? Who touched me? And you can imagine the disciples are like, who touched everybody? Like, what do you mean? There's a million people standing around us. Jesus, what do you mean who touched you? And this demonstrates Jesus' sovereignty. There were lots of people touching him, but only one time does his power go out of him. Jesus is fully in control of healing. He's not some lucky rabbit's foot that if you happen to touch, you're like, sweet, raspberry's gone, or strawberry, whatever you call these things, right? It's not like that. He's not a good luck charm. He knows in his sovereignty, he is choosing to heal this woman who he knows is coming from behind. And she comes scared, and he turns, who touched me? And you can imagine that moment, she's like, oh gosh, what have I done? Because her whole life, she's known that she's unclean, and you can imagine most men, when she's touched them, would have probably gone, why are you touching me? Now I'm unclean, why would you do that? Not Jesus. No, instead, Jesus says, come here. Hey, did you touch me? Yeah, you're healed. And then he says something very interesting. He says, hey, tell me everything. And so she does. And can you imagine being a woman who's not valued in the society and having gone through everything you've gone through, and you've got to tell Jesus everything, which means you've got to say things like vaginal bleeding in front of a bunch of men. And you can imagine how terrified you are and how scared you are. And Jesus is going, okay. And he does something very profound. And he says, hey, daughter, your faith has made you well. Daughter, your faith has made you well. She's not some unclean woman. She's now in the family of God. She's not something that can't be touched anymore that has somehow defiled Jesus. No, he cannot be defiled through her touch. Instead, his holiness redeems her. And she publicly, in front of all of these people who have known that she's unclean, who would have known that she's not anything, who living with the guilt and the shame and all of this, and Jesus restores her. He doesn't rebuke her. He restores her. He honors that tiny, infinitesimal amount of faith that allows her to go, if I just touch him. And he goes, that's enough. That's enough faith for me to magnify you. Child, you came from behind, but I will put you in front and I will raise you up in front of everybody and remind them you're mine. And how much faith did it take? Very little. Very little. And Jairus is standing right there, and Jesus is showing him, and he's showing us that even the smallest measure of faith in God's economy is enough. And he will magnify it. He will grow it. He will return you to a place where you are reminded, I am not unclean, I am whole, and I am his. And, oh, can you imagine being that woman? And the good news is all of you who have had an encounter with Jesus Christ are that woman. You are that woman that the King looks upon you, calling you all daughter. And you're in the family of God. And we see extraordinary faith here. The point of fearless faith is to not have fear. It's to have faith despite your fear. She's exalted because she chose to pursue Christ, even in her trembling, even in her fear, even in her phobeo. And Jesus says, that's enough. You are bold, and I will magnify you, and you will be the example for generations to come, including Jairus, who's standing here waiting on me to go heal his daughter. You are the example of what it takes to please me. And it was a small offering of faith. And Jesus takes it, and he makes it a wonderful thing. Because in the end, it's about him anyways. Right? And so we see this woman, and she has this moment because she is desperate, and in her desperation, God magnifies her. And so now Jairus, right? And she's standing there, and he's standing there, and you can imagine what it must have been like to be Jairus in this moment. I mean, I can imagine coming to Jesus and going, hey, will you come with me to heal my daughter? And Jesus going, yeah, I'll come with you. And we're walking along, and I'm thinking, oh, good. And then all of a sudden, this woman, this unclean, ragged, smelling woman has now taken his time. And I'm Jairus, and I'm a synagogue leader. I don't value women. I don't value unclean people. And my daughter is dying. And now I've got to stand here and wait for Jesus to deal with a woman who's unclean. And Jairus is standing there, and you can imagine, he's like, did you not hear me? I said she's dying. This woman's been bleeding for 12 years. We can come back to her, right? Take a number. I was first, right? You can imagine the feelings Jairus is having. If I would have been there, like, I'd have been like, okay, can we, I don't have a watch. They haven't been invented yet. Jesus, listen, I'm a very powerful man. I don't know if you know who I am. I know you're son of God, whatever, but I got a lot of money. Would that interest you? What do you need to hurry up? Right? You can imagine Jairus is probably not the kind of guy who's used to waiting. He's so powerful. Like, he's not the guy who opens his synagogue door. They don't have these, but like he did and came out, and there's an intern there, and he's like, hey, intern rabbi, could you get me some coffee? Probably hasn't been invented yet either. And you can imagine, he's probably like, yes, I will go right now. Not, well, when I get to it. And here's Jairus, a very powerful man, and he's having to wait on Jesus, who he doesn't fully understand anyways, to help a woman he would have never respected. But he learns a very valuable lesson, because Jairus is desperate for his daughter, and Jesus is saying, hey, I'm desperate for my daughter too. And I'm going to heal my daughter, and then I'm going to deal with your daughter. But if you think I don't care about my daughter, though she may be ragged, and though she may be shameful, and though she may be unclean, if you don't think I care about her, then you've misunderstood my mission. And I don't want y'all to miss that. The most powerful man in society and the lowest woman in society are on equal playing field in the eyes of Jesus Christ. And he heals her, and then he comes to Jairus. He says, okay, let's go. And so there are three attacks on Jairus' faith. The first one is that he has to wait. He has to wait. And I'm an anxious person. Like, when I want something, I want it now. And I don't know if that's because I grew up in the technological age, right? All of us young people are like, y'all remember AOL? It was like, burn, ding, 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 ding. Y'all talking about? And you just want to be like, mwah! And then you got Wi-Fi, and you got wireless internet, and then you go to grandma's house, and be like, ding, 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 and you're like, oh, grandma, they have Google fiber hoods. Get on it, you know? And you're like finally there, and you're like drafting your thing, and all of a sudden somebody picks up the phone, and you're like, I'm gonna kill you. So I wouldn't have been probably as patient as Jairus is. And I think this attack on Jairus' faith, I think he probably passes it, because we don't hear anything about it in the text. I think had Jairus acted like a fool in this moment, I think we would have known. But instead, I think he's sitting there going, I clearly don't understand this man anyways, so I guess we're on your timing anyways. And there's an important lesson here, that Jesus' timing is very important. It's very important. And it's his call. Right? You don't mess with the sovereignty of God. And how many of y'all felt like, Jesus, you're not doing this on my time? I need you to hurry up. It's never Jesus slow down. You know, it's always like, Jesus, hurry up. Unless he wants to like send you to, well, Liberia right now, you'd be like, whoa. They have Ebola. No. But it's usually, Jesus, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And yet we see him in perfect timing in this story, sovereignly doing what it was that he set out to do. And so now he picks up, and the next attack on Jairus' faith is that he's now told his daughter's dead. Right? He came to Jesus when he thought his daughter was sick, and now his daughter's dead. You can imagine, I mean, in that moment, if somebody came and go, hey, your person you love the most is dead, I'd just be like, hey, Jesus, it's too late. It's too late. We stopped for that woman. I don't understand that. She's dead. And he has this moment, and Jesus comes and he goes, hey, buddy, hey, don't be afraid. Just believe. Don't be afraid. Just believe. And you can imagine, he's like, believe what? He's never seen a resurrection. He has no paradigm for what Jesus is capable of doing. So Jesus is asking him to go, hey, you just saw me do a miracle. You just saw me bring a woman from 12 years of death back to life. I need you to trust me. Just trust me, Jairus. Come with me and I will show you who I am. I'm about to blow your paradigms. Do not be fearful. Just trust me. And so Jairus goes with him. In an incredible moment of faith. And so they're walking along again to Jairus' house. And I can imagine if I were on that walk, I'd be like, maybe she's not really dead. Maybe she's in a coma. I read something about that on WebMD last night. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know how he's doing it. Like, I can imagine my faith still wouldn't be big enough. Like, I'd be like, maybe there's a misunderstanding. Maybe this is a really bad episode of Punked, you know, and she's not even sick. Like, I don't know, but what am I trusting you for? And then they get there and he has his third attack on his faith that the mourners are like, no, she's dead, like dead, D-E-A-D, dead. Maybe you don't understand this. There's no life in your daughter. And Jesus does something very incredible. He goes, hey, all of you doubters, get out. See, in the story of the woman, he allows everybody publicly to see it because he's restoring her. He's giving her life again. He's bringing her back to a place of integrity. He's bringing her back to a place of love and wholeness in front of the entire society. But when it comes to this little girl, he goes, hey, all of you who doubt, get out. And obviously, they're going to know that a miracle is about to happen because when she's out playing in the yard, they're going to be like, whoa. Whoa, but they don't get to partake of this special moment. No, no, no. This miracle, this one's behind closed doors. And only those who chose to believe got to witness it. And that is a gift. Oh, that's a gift. Right? God's sovereignty is going to play out in your life. And you can either be a participant in it or you can miss out on it. But the truth is his will is going to play out. And so either you can be in the inner room watching it or you can be the scoffer who gets kicked out. And then next thing you know, the girl comes out and you're like, well, that didn't go the way I thought it would. Wish I'd have been in the room. So they get moved out. And because Jairus has just a small measure of faith, he gets to watch the first resurrection we have in recorded in the Gospels. And Jesus does something really profound as he touches her and he tells her to get up. We know he could have just said, get up from his mouth. But what we know is that the Jews who touch a dead person are defiled by that. Again, he's touching an unclean woman and now he's touching an unclean girl. And both times he is not affected by that. He's hammer time. Can't touch us. Da-na-na-na. He's got it. Your defilement does not pass on to Christ. His holiness passes to you. Is he worth following? Yes. Why? Because you cannot tarnish him. He's not subjected to the Old Testament law. He's the fulfillment of the law and therefore above the law. And when he touches dead people, they rise. He doesn't go cleanse himself. Instead, little girls come back to life. You can imagine Jairus is like, man, I had faith, but I didn't know this is what you were going to do. Wow. And again, Jairus had phobeo. He was fearful. But like the woman, even in his fear, the small measure of faith he brings to Jesus is magnified in an amazing way. Can you imagine being in the room when your daughter comes back to life? That's amazing. And Jesus does this for a man who was probably opposing him just days before. And Jesus says, hey, I know you don't fully get it, but don't be afraid. Just believe. And he does this incredible thing and he brings this young woman back to life. We have two incredible daughters in this story and Jesus cares about both. He He cares about the top of society and cares about the bottom of society. Jesus isn't affected by uncleanliness. Oh, no, no. No, he's perfect and holy, and nothing you can do can trifle with that. And when you're scared, and when you're terrified, you take a small measure of faith, and your king will raise it up, call you daughter, and magnify it in ways you could not imagine. That is fearless faith. That is trusting Christ beyond what you think he can do. And even in those moments, he blows your paradigms. Their story is clearly contrasted with the disciples who are just like, what do you mean who touched you? Everybody touched you. Like they're a foil to the belief of this woman. And then there's the foil to the scoffers in the room, right? And Jesus is like, what are you doing? Now, I want you to understand how you go from mourning to laughing very quickly. In the ancient Near East, they would actually hire professional mourners. And so a lot of people who are showing this sadness for this girl may have never even known the girl. Right? They're just people who are standing there making sport of a young girl who's dead and making sport of a man who says he can save her. And so they're ushered out of the room. And then Jesus goes back to his hometown of Nazareth. And you read what happens at the beginning of chapter 6. They're like, that's that boy from Nazareth. What does he think he's doing? And Jesus says he can't do many miracles there. It's not because he's not capable of it, but because Jesus is trying to magnify faith there. And there's not enough to even be magnified. He's looking here and going, you're obstinate people. And so let me be very clear. Can Jesus heal without faith? Yes. Yes. There's this weird thought that you have to have faith in order to make Jesus do something. That's just silly, as if somehow we control Jesus. No, he heals at his own pleasure, in his own way, in his own timing. But he invites us to participate in it. He's inviting you into the room where Jairus was. You just got to have a little bit of faith. Even when you don't believe, you just go, gosh, I only have this much. And he goes, then give it to me. Give it to me and watch what I can do. That's fearless faith. It's not the absence of fear. It's believing despite your fear. And so what's the so what from this? What do we learn for? Is what are you guys desperate for? I'm not naive. I mean, there are people in this room, I'm sure, are really struggling. Some of you probably have sick kids. Some of you relate to Jairus more than you wish you did. Some of you relate to the woman because you're sick. And you're just like, gosh, some of you in here might have cancer. Some of you in here might have whatever. You might have put a drill bit through your thumb. You think it's the end of the world. It's not. I learned. Some of your marriages are just crumbling. Just crumbling. Singles, like, I know the plight of the single. I know that times there our hearts yearn for something that God doesn't seem to be giving us. That along the way of God bringing you into the fullness of who you want to be in him, you're watching him stop for other girls and giving them husbands. And you're like walking with him going, Is it going to be my turn? I know that. I know it's hard. What are you desperate for? Are you running to Christ with it? Are you running to him with the small measure of faith you have in you and giving it to him so that he can magnify it, so he can turn to you and go, hey, don't come from behind. You come boldly to the throne with full confidence. You are welcome into the Holy of Holies. I will magnify your faith. When you are desperate, you come to my feet and you watch what I do. A couple of years ago, I was meeting with a woman who, theologically, she just didn't quite line up with Watermark. She's a little bit more charismatic. And so we were talking, and she wanted to start a healing ministry here at Watermark. And so Emily Rudolph and I were meeting with her. And just through the conversations, we realized just it wasn't going to be a good fit for Watermark. Some of the things she believed weren't tenets of the faith that we hold to. And so I was just trying to explain it to her and as graciously as I can. And she just said, hey, Naki, can I tell you something? And I was like, well, this should be rich. And, you know, I was kind of nervous what she was going to say. And she just goes, hey, listen, the only difference between me and you being an evangelical, is that when I pray for something, I actually believe God might do it. And I was like, whoa. And she goes, you evangelicals, you pray for something, but you don't believe it. And then you say, well, if it's God's will. And so when somebody gets sick, you just pray and you just go, hey, maybe you'll do it, maybe you won't. And I was like, whoa, maybe you're right. Right? Because if your mom gets cancer and you're like, God, I want you to heal her. But there's a part of me that understands that suffering is a unique part of God's plan. And so I default to that because it's too hard to ask expectingly. Because if God says no, my heart gets broken. But I'm telling you, God will deal with the disappointment too. There's no excuse to not pray expectantly. And I have lived in that world for too long where I pray for things and I go, but God, whatever your will be done. And so I can never be disappointed by him because I never actually ask him for anything. God, I'm desperate for you to heal this person. I'm desperate for you to remove this sin struggle from my life. I'm desperate for these things to happen. But you know what? Your will be done, and you're probably going to say no. Shame on me. Because the model of faith that we see in Scripture is that we put them at his feet and go, I am yours, and my daughter may die, and you might bring her back to life, but whatever it is, I just want to be at your feet. And I think more times than not, Jesus wants to give us a yes, but we spend so much time just believing it's going to be no. Whatever you're desperate for, give it to Christ. And the second so what of this is to be fearless. Only in 2014 in Dallas, Texas, would I be able to say Ebola, and that matters, right? I mean, where else in the world, or what other time in the world would that have mattered? I'd be like, hey, y'all, Ebola, and 2 years ago, you'd be like, that's not relevant. And suddenly it's relevant. So love them or hate them, I think President Obama did something really cool the other day. When Nina Pham was declared clean from her Ebola virus, he gave her a hug. I love that, because he's not scared. Right, and there are a lot of people here in Dallas who have been on a quarantine watch list who are now coming off of that watch. Like, they have been determined by the best science that we have that they do not have Ebola, and guess what? They are being shunned. And that just, I'm like, what? And they go, yeah, people aren't inviting us to their homes, or people are telling me I can't be around their kids. And I'm not saying be cavalier, right? Like, just don't go to Presby and, like, lick the walls. I think that would be weird. But if the best scientists in the world go, hey, this person doesn't have Ebola, then I'm like, great. Like, I work here, and there are kids here all the time. And y'all, they carry things, right? And I haven't had my flu shot, so I'm like, all the time. That kid's sniffling, you know? I'm not like Christ. I will get what they got. I'm not scared of Ebola. I'm not going to shun people. I'm not going to be scared of these things. Instead, I'm going to embrace them and go, look, if science says you're fine, you're fine. Why? Because I know the healer. Look, I don't want Ebola, but I also don't want to shun people out of fear. Be fearless. You go on a mission trip, you love people fiercely. You eat the local food. Or, you know, don't drink the water in Mexico. But you know what I'm saying? You be all in. We don't have to be fearful, because we serve a king who's greater than disease and death. Now, look, I'm not saying be cavalier. I'm not saying you can just jump off cliffs and go, God's going to catch me. And that's not how that works. But I do think when there is a measured approach to things and God asks you to be fearless, be fearless. Hug Ebola patients. And the third one is this, and this is more of an axillary, but I think it's important that I tell you this, is that if you are the woman that's been the hemorrhaging woman and you've touched Jesus' cloak, then I want you to know that you got the same reception she got, and that is that he looked at you, he called you daughter, and he said, you're free. And so many times, we want to go right back to where we were. Like, how weird would that be if that woman had lived in a hemorrhaging colony, and she went back, and her friends are like, are you still bleeding? And she's like, no, I'm healed. And they would look at her and go, then why are you here? You have been desperate to be free. You've imagined what it'd be like to walk in newness of life, and you've been giving it in every measure, a fresh start. You are clean. Do not come back here. But we do that. We carry the weight of guilt and shame from our past, and we pretend like we haven't touched his cloak. And we go around saying, I'm a hemorrhaging woman. And people go, you're bleeding? You go, no, but I was a hemorrhaging woman. No, you're not. You're clean. You're not an adulterer. You're not a pornographer. You're not addicted to alcohol. You're not codependent. You're not any of those things. Are they a part of your story? Yes. But is it a part of your identity? No. You are a daughter. A daughter. And it's silly to go back, because Jesus would never ask you to go back. Instead, he wants you to be free. He wants you to walk in the newness of life that he gave to you. He wants you to have fearless faith and to run after everything that he died for you to have. Don't put the scarlet letter back on yourself, and don't let anybody else put it on you. Said, remind yourself every day and the people around you that we are daughters of a king. And we should run to him. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for women that love you. And I thank you that, like the hemorrhaging woman, that so many of us have touched your cloak. And some of us, like Jairus, came boldly before you. And many of us, Lord, came from behind. But either way, you proclaimed us as clean. You healed us. You saved us. Lord, may we never take that for granted or live as if we haven't. So, Lord, allow our lives to be those that reflect the family that we really belong in. And that is yours. Lord, we love you, and it's in your son's name that we ask these things. Amen.
If Christy Walsh is in the house, please come back to the sound booth.